court would also like to welcome to this third session students from Dupree High School. The third case for oral argument is the First National Bank of Fort Pierre Appellant versus the South Dakota State Banking Commission, Appellees. Justice Zinner has disqualified himself from this case. And the court has appointed the Honorable Jerome Eckridge, a judge from the Fourth Circuit, who serves this area to sit in Justice Zinner's place. For the appellant, First National Bank of Fort Pierre, we have Mr. Brad Sinclair, an attorney from Fargo. Also present would be Attorney Frank Farrar from Britton and Randall Turner, an attorney from Aberdeen. Mr. Sinclair, I understand you'll be making the argument this morning.
Yes.
Very well. And for the appellee, First Western Bank, is Mr. Gerald Laughlin, an attorney from Omaha. And also present would be Mr. Thomas Lee, an attorney from here. I understand, Mr. Laughlin, you'll be making the argument.
That's correct.
Very well. Thank you. Mr. Sinclair, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you.
Chief Justice, Justices, teachers, students, thank you for giving me the privilege to be here today. The students aren't aware of it, but myself and Mr. Laughlin are both attorneys not licensed to practice in South Dakota. And because of special proceedings and procedures, you've given us a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be here, and we appreciate that.
Well, you can come back.
Well, we appreciate that invitation, too. Thank you. The issue in the case, the major focal issue in this case, the issue for this case rests on this principle. The principle is that a banking commission made a decision. They made a decision to grant an application of First Western Bank to establish a branch office in Leeds, South Dakota. The issue on appeal is whether there is substantial evidence, substantial relevant and competent evidence in the mind of a reasonable person that can adequately support that banking commission's decision. And we assert that the banking commission's decision is not supported by competent and relevant evidence. Let's turn real quick and look at what is the standard for review by this court. The students may not be aware of it, but there is standards that this court looks at in determining the issues today before the court. Naturally, one standard is clearly erroneous. You do not substitute your judgment for that of the Banking Commission. However, if the Banking Commission's decision was arbitrary, capricious, if it was an abuse of discretion, or it's clearly erroneous, not supported by the facts, you can, in fact, reverse the Banking Commission's decision. Now, we contend that part of this appeal concerns either questions of law or mixed questions of law and fact that allows us a de novo review. And that de novo review, where you get to, in fact, substitute your judgment for the Banking Commission, concerns the statute. The focal point of this whole appeal is South Dakota Codified Law 51A3-9. And it's subpart 3 and 4. And where we contend that it's a de novo review of the law or a mixed question of the law and of the facts concerns subpart 3 and 4. 3 says that the Banking Commission has to examine the need of the community where the proposed bank would be located. And number 4, subpart 4 says the Banking Commission is to examine the ability of the community to support the proposed bank. And the commission is to look at the banking history of the community, and it's supposed to look at the opportunity for employment of profitable funds in the community. And here's the problem. The whole problem in this case is we had 2 expert witnesses, and the Banking Commission had to decide which expert witness to believe. Our expert witness, Randy Stufen, testified that Lawrence County, where Lead is located, Lawrence County is a unique county. We have the north, where three-fourths of the population is located, is profiting, and it's economically viable, and it's flourishing. And the remaining southern half of Lawrence County has one-fourth the population. and the demographics and the economics of the southern portion of Lawrence County demonstrate that it's opposite, and it's the difference.
Because it could all change. I mean, one thing I suppose that didn't go before the commission here is the fact now that we've got this decision that the Homestake Mine is going to turn into this science lab, which I think a lot of people are anticipating is going to totally change the financial situation and lead. Did that ever come before the commission, or did that happen while after the decision and while you were in the process of appealing?
No, that was a matter that was in fact discussed at the level of the commission hearing, and it was Witness O'Grady. Witness O'Grady appeared on behalf of First Western Bank. He testified that, yes, there was some discussion regarding an underground laboratory at the mine. He testified, and his statement was the fact that it still remains a mystery if it's ever going to occur. It remains a mystery as to the extent and the impact upon Lee. He testified that he's aware of no scientists that have signed any contracts or any agreements to conduct studies there, no institutions agreeing to conduct studies, and he also said there was no contracts for any construction or improvements.
Now, was this before the governor made the announcement that the science lab decision had been made, or
no,
when he said that, or was, because I know it was a mystery for a long time, but there was an announcement from the governor's office that there was going to be this science lab was going to be there. Was that before the commission too, or?
Yes, the governor had announced that there is these tentative plans, there's this tentative commitment of millions of dollars by the state. But naturally, the commitment is still premised upon that you're going to have scientists, you're going to have companies sign up and agree to conduct,
right,
and that there is, in fact, a benefit to having an underground mine to conduct tests. That was brought out. And O'Grady, a witness for First Western, did testify that it was still a mystery, and the impact was unknown, no contract. So it was a factor brought before the commission.
Thank you.
On your expert, that the commission evidently did not find credible some of the things that he testified to. Our standard of review is what?
Your standard of review is, number one, is if you look at the facts. The commission is the one that makes various determinations of fact. And with fact, naturally, you're supposed to give weight and deference to the commission's findings. And you're not going to substitute your opinion for the commission's on facts.
So how can we, I mean, don't we have to take that, their decision about your expert?
No. And the reason I answer no is this, is first of all, we have to look at the totality of the evidence. We have to look at, is there substantial, competent, and relevant evidence to support the commission's decision? And we're asserting that the answer to that is no. And we're asserting no because of case law and statutory law. All the case law cited in our brief, the case law provides that the commission and this reviewing court is examining the community and the surrounding community. The expert witness in this case for First Western Bank, Mr. Coddington, made the statement that lead is in central Lawrence County. What happens in Lawrence County is an indication of what's going to happen to lead. And he basically said that, and all this report concerned the economics and demographics of the county of Lawrence. Our expert witness said, you can't do that because they're two different economic and demographic areas of the county. The north is different than the south. The other thing is Mr. Coddington said, you have to examine what is the banking market, the primary and the secondary market of the customers for Lead South Dakota if this branch bank is approved. Mr. Coddington said that the primary market is going to be the area south and southwest of Lead and directly west of Lead all the way to Wyoming. And Mr. Coddington indicated that the primary area is basically everything south of Lead. He said the secondary area is the Deadwood area. Our experts said the primary area is roughly 7 mile radius of Lead because of the mountains, the roads, the hills. And he said he used and accepted Illinois' threshold analysis, which says that you look at a 25-mile square radius. So that was the second area that he looked at. And what happened is Mr. Coddington, because the economics and the demographics of Lead are not positive, Mr. Coddington focused on the county. He focused on the county. The statute and the case law says the focus is on the community or the adjacent communities. Our expert examined Lead. Our expert examined Deadwood, examined the two communities together. Our expert examined the general population for this proposed branch and where it would draw its customers. Mr. Coddington, because of the economics, drew his analysis based on the entire county. To give you an example, his report...
Before you get to that...
Yes.
Okay, but then... And maybe we're stepping back a little bit here, but then you've got a decision by the Banking Commission based on all the conflicting evidence and so forth. And then we have a Circuit Court Judge, Gores, reviewing all that evidence and then affirming the Banking Commission. What effect does that have on the review or the standard of review?
Sure. First of all, the evidence was not conflicting. The evidence used at the hearing was evidence produced by the government, census bureaus, the county, the state. So what it is just interpretation.
The evidence, but the spin that everybody puts on it is conflicting.
And the spin was they spun looking at the county. We looked at the community as the law provides. But as to your question, the question is it's the same standard of review from the administrative decision by the Banking Commission to the district court. It's the same standard of review. It's clearly erroneous. And that's if we're looking at the facts. But if we're looking at the issue of the law and the application of law, then it's de novo. And we're contending it's de novo as to the statute. And if it's not de novo, it is for sure a mixed question of law and fact that makes reference to communities, not the county, communities.
Thank you.
We're contending that under the statute, 51A3.3-9, subparts 3 and 4, that's the focal point of this appeal. And the statute provides for and requires that there has to be some sort of a dissertation or a determination that there's some sort of need. Their expert witness, Mr. Coddington, said he wasn't aware of any need. He wasn't aware of any needs of the community not being met by the existing competition or the banking community as a whole. The other thing that's interesting about need is look at their application. First Western's application says if we're allowed to branch into Lead, 3.5 miles from our other facility in Deadwood, we're going to hire 1.5 tellers, somebody to man the tellers, man the front to either take deposits or to cash checks. Then they're going to have one full-time account person. The account person was going to open up accounts, possibly close accounts, and then they're not going to have an officer. They're not going to have a manager of the facility. There's not going to be anybody to run the facility. It is going to be run from Deadwood. They're not going to have a loan officer. They're not going to hire a loan officer. They're not hiring anybody for real estate. They're not hiring anybody for commercial or anybody for residential consumer. They said, if a need arises, we're going to bring our loan officer from Deadwood over to Lead. But at this time, we have no established days, hours. We have no established commitment that there's going to be a loan officer. So if you look at the statute, where's the need? Coddington said he didn't have any, and their application demonstrates there isn't a need. Let's look at the statute, subpart 4, as it deals with support. The statute provides you have to look at the existing competition in the area. The testimony was clear that it's very competitive. There's a brief discussion by Mr. Stuthen. He took a brief analysis using his own utilization of the HHI index to look at competition. He says it's very competitive. He's used that in the past. Mr. Stuthen looked at the sizes of banks. If you look at Mr. Stuthen's report, he compared communities that had two institutions. And communities with two institutions, his analysis was that the average amount of deposits for those type of communities is $45 million, and Lead had $33 million. He then examined communities with three banks, and the average deposits were $97 million. If you bring in another branch and you allow this branch, we're at $33 million versus $97 million. We're 300% under the average. Mr. Stuthen looked at, okay, let's bind and compare Deadwood to Lead. Let's compare them as one community. So there's four offices. He looked at four offices, and those deposits average $121 million. Take Deadwood and Lead, we're at 118, still less than the average. Mr. Stuthen then looked at, and we have exhibits, and Mr. Stuthen looked at, and our exhibits provide, that we look at what is the number of people supporting a banking institution. And our reports show that in the state of South Dakota, One of our cases shows in 1956, a little bit of history here, but 1956, it was one bank, it was one bank to every 3,860 residents in the state of South Dakota in 1956. Today, it is one person, it is one bank for every 1,679 residents in the state of South Dakota. So the threshold, the average in South Dakota is one for every 1,679. Lawrence County is one for every 2,000. Spearfish is one for every 2,200. They exceed South Dakota's average. They're underbanked. They could use another bank. We look at Lead. Lead is one for every 1,000 members of the community. Deadwood is one for every 690 members. If you add another branch bank in Lead, now you're down to one bank for every 760 residents. We're overbanked in Lead before you add the branch bank by over 200%. If you use Mr. Coddington's argument, which is the North has 1,600 residents, the South has 5,700 residents, fine, we've got four banks, two in Deadwood, we've got two in Lead. That's four. You divide it by the population of 5,700, you're at approximately one bank for every 1,400. You're still under the South Dakota average as the number of people supporting one bank, but you're well under the Lawrence County average. Now, if you go add another office, now you're looking at a number that is one for every approximately 1,100. You're still well underneath the county. We're contending that when you, because of the economics and the demographics of the area, we're contending that the Banking Commission erred. When interpreting the law dealing with communities, you examine the communities, and they erred by approving and adopting the report of Coddington, which is Lawrence County this and Lawrence County this. Coddington purposely did not examine the factors that this court has examined in the past. Examine population. Population of Lead from 1970 to the year 2000 decreased 30%. Deadwood decreased 32% for the same period of time. Our expert witness describes the service. Demographics, no. The expert witness service provides that in 2004, the population was believed to be 2,997. 2005 is believed to be 2,951.
But didn't the commission, when I read their findings of fact, weren't they relying heavily on expected population rather than current and past?
Well, here's the interesting thing with that, and that was an excellent question. Our expert relies upon a service. He doesn't wave his magic wand and try to determine, and he doesn't rub his crystal ball. And what he did is describe the demographics now. And they say the population is going to decrease from 2005 to 2010 by 122 people, 3.1% decrease.
But the commission rejected that. And made findings opposite of that, saying, based on what we know, it's not going to, and they accepted the other expert.
Sure. And we're saying is that's clearly erroneous based on the evidence and the testimony. You have George Huck, who is our real estate mortgage guru, and the guru only spends 2 days a week in Lead, and the reason why is because he has 2.5 real estate mortgages a month that he closes in Lead because there isn't a demand. And that was in 2005. 2004, he was less than 2.5. And he has stated that if there was more need, he would be in Lead, and he'd spend more time closing mortgages, but there isn't a need. You've got D. Black that testified he's a master of economics. He's been involved in the banking industry since 1984. He's been at this branch since 2001. He says, our growth is stagnant. Our deposits are stagnant. Our deposits, by the way, have continued to decrease. In the last 8 years, they've decreased 9%. In the last 4 years, 16%. When I say our deposits, it's the community of Lead, and that it's 14% the last 2 years, and it's estimated, according to Stufen's subscription to demographics now, a continued decrease in deposits, another $2 million. And what happens is this, is that with Coddington asserts that Southern Lawrence County is going to grow by 800 people.
2 minutes, Council.
Thank you. He has no grounds, he has no basis, he has no support. He's also the same individual. Recognize this. He's the same individual that said Lead is an economic hub for the area. And I asked him on cross-examination, does Lead have a lumber yard? Don't know. They've got 10 developments in the area that they're asserting is bringing in all this population. George Huck and D. Black testified it's only second homes. It is vacation homes. The population isn't increasing. But what's interesting is Coddington also testified. I asked him, if Leeds is a big commercial area and development area, does it have a Walmart? His response was, I don't know. Mr. Coddington didn't spend any time, he didn't spend the effort, he didn't do an analysis. I've got Randy Stufen, who's been a South Dakota resident forever. He's been before the commission numerous times. You saw his CV. It's in my reply brief, the number of reports he's done. He knows South Dakota inside and out. And for the commission to make a decision, and I'll get to it in my last 10 minutes, they had to be biased. The only way for that commission to make a decision, they had to pick somebody's report. The only way to approve it is to prove Coddington's, because Stufen was the opposite. And to do that, they had to be somewhat biased.
Well, they actually even say they were misled by Stufen's report about the use of the HHI in this context.
Stufen testified.
Those are pretty strong words. We don't often see those kinds of findings. Misled.
The commission had to do that in order to discredit Mr. Stufen, in order to adopt the findings of Mr. Coddington. But Mr. Stufen testified, it's in the transcript, that he utilizes it, and it's not the Federal Reserve's defined area for the HHI, but he utilizes it to check if there's competition in the area. That's just for his own analysis. And he says, I've been doing that since he's appeared before the commission dealing with the branch bank issue in Winter, South Dakota. And he says, I did that to analyze the competition. I've been doing it since. But he testified that his opinion was not premised upon the HHI. It's just a factor he considered to see if there's competitiveness. And he said his study revealed it's highly competitive.
Your
so there was no mistake. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Laughlin, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, since we've just been referring to Mr. Stufen, I'll start off with my response to Mr. Sinclair's arguments about Mr. Stufen being the only expert who had any credibility in this case. And first of all, let's talk about the Herfindahl Index, or the HHI, and why the commission found that they had been misled, and that the findings can be brought out on my cross-examination of Mr. Stufen regarding the way he presented HHI. HHI, of course, is used by the federal banking authorities and the Justice Department of the United States. They use it only for one purpose, and that is to determine whether mergers can go through because they might decrease competition because of lack of competition. The federal authorities, the HHI, was never designed for any purpose of determining whether or not a branch bank should be allowed. But Mr. Stufen uses it for that purpose, and he's the only person to our knowledge in the world who used it for those purposes. More important, Mr. Stufen, it's not in his report. He has his report, and he says, I'm using the HHI. The HHI, of course, is a federal instrument, and there are detailed guidelines on how you calculate the HHI. On cross-examination, Mr. Stufen acknowledged that although he didn't put it in his report, he didn't use the federal guidelines in how to calculate this HHI. And had he used the guidelines of the HHI that's used by federal authorities, it would have come up with a different result. That was misleading because it's not in his report. He says in his report, I'm using the HHI. Everybody knows how the HHI is supposed to be calculated. He calculated it differently, and had I not brought it out on cross-examination, no one would have known that he was using it differently. And more important, our expert, we had two experts. One was John Danforth, who has worked for the Federal Reserve System, who has been involved in 9 out of the last 10 largest bank mergers in this country and Canada, and he testified that it's inappropriate to use the HHI for this purpose of determining whether a branch bank should be allowed. Mr. Danforth also testified, by the way, that when you're looking at communities that are very small, such as Lee, that has 1.99 square miles because very small city limits. Deadwood has very small city limits. It's improper to look at all these things that Mr. Sinclair relied on about whether or not so many people per bank, because the cities of Deadwood and Lead draw their business from outside their city limits. Both of them do.
So is it true what he said about the community versus county, that your expert uses the county, the whole county?
our expert, for some purposes, used the entire county. For other purposes, he used other parts. Our expert did, first of all, determined what was the primary service area. And by the way, our expert, Mr. Coddington, has done over 150 of these studies in determining whether a bank coming into a community will be successful.
Is it appropriate to use numbers of population that is current? Or, I mean, it seems to me that a lot of the decision here was based on what they're expecting the population to be as opposed to what it is today. Is that appropriate?
Actually, that's not what the commission relied upon, Your Honor. In this case, the big dispute was whether or not the lead economy had turned around. Our evidence was that the lead economy turned around in the year 2002. This hearing took place in January of 2002.
If there is this need for an additional bank, they just said all you're going to have is a teller and a half up there doing about what it sounds like an ATM machine does. No loan officers, apparently none of the more sophisticated banking services being offered on site. What's your response to that?
My response is this, Your Honor. First of all, we are already competing in lead from our Deadwood branch. In our case, in the last 5 years, the Deadwood branch has increased its deposits from the lead area, from the lead zip code, from $2 million to $4 million. In the last 5 years, we have increased our loans from approximately $4 million to $11 million. We're doing that from our Deadwood branch. We are able to service it from our Deadwood branch, but we're going to be able to service it better because it will be more convenient for our lead customers.
Was there any testimony that that your lead customers were requesting a branch in their own community?
I think that there was testimony to this effect, Your Honor, that during the heavy traffic season, the heavy tourist season, it takes sometimes up to 45 to 50 minutes to go over this 3.5 miles between Lead and the Deadwood branch. And people, yes, there was all kinds of, as a matter of fact, we had 38 letters of support from people who said, yeah, we want this branch bank here in Lead because it will be more convenient for us. And of course, it's obvious that it would be more convenient. We're already competing in there, Your Honor, but we're going to compete more. And what we have to do is look at the legal standard for what constitutes need. First of all, I want to remind the court that in 1990, the legislature changed the statute specifically with respect to need. Prior to 1990, the statute provided this. You must look at the need of the community, taking into account the adequacy of existing bank facilities. When they amended the statute in 2000, they took that out, and that follows the 1977 court case here of the American State Bank of Pierre case, where this court, and back then, of course, the statute included that extra language, taking into account this particular adequacy of these facilities. In that case, the banks in Pierre opposed a coming in of a new bank. And they said, on appeal, we claim that the only way to interpret that statute is, unless when we show that we're offering all the services that can be offered for banks, there's no need as a matter of law and you can't let them in. This court then said, wait a minute. When the Banking Commission evaluates whether or not to allow a branch, we have to take into account that public policy favors competition in banking. And therefore, of course, we have regulations that we want to protect and make sure that depositors and creditors are not hurt. But the commission and then the courts reviewing it, and this is the American State Bank case, we make an evaluation. On the one hand, we compare, are there risks and dangers to a substantial group of depositors or creditors versus the known quality that public policy favors competition in banking. That's what we decide. Now, Mr. Sinclair would ask witnesses, hey, are you providing all these deposits and loans and all that? And they say yes. And he says that's the end of it. It's not the end of it according to American State Bank case. And it's not the end of it because of the amendment to the statute, which took out that element of adequacy of existing bank facilities from the question of need whatsoever. This court held adequacy is one of many factors in American State Bank. The legislature said, hey, it's not even one factor anymore in 2000. And when we say that there is a need for competition, of course, our bank in Deadwood is already providing competition. We're going to provide better competition if this application is granted. And our expert, Dean Coddington, said we will be successful in that branch application, and we will be able to be successful financially. And that, in his view, shows that there is a need.
Was the focus of your argument before the commission that you needed to provide better services for your existing customers, or that there were people in Lead that were not being served that don't bank with you that needed your facilities up there?
It was twofold, Your Honor. Number one, it was essential to service our existing customers. That was one. Second of all, we will be successful in financially if we're allowed to do this application because of all these situations in Lead and the surrounding area and the service area that will allow this branch to succeed. And once we know that a new competitor who can come in and succeed, that shows that there is a need. It was that twofold argument.
Well, now, your client, the Bank of Sturgis, so how many branches do they have and where are they?
I have that in my brief, Your Honor, and being from Omaha, I'm not sure I can do it, but I can tell you that there's a branch in Sturgis, there's a branch right here. When I was in, my wife and I made a trip out of this, I can tell you in at least two communities that we drove through, there were other branches.
There's one in Sturgis, one here, one in Deadwood, and if you had, the client has their way, there'd be at least one more in Lead.
At least one more in Lead, and they already have at least two more that I know of that I drove through on my vacation, and I'm probably omitting.
And I read your brief. I just forgot how many there were, so I was hoping you'd help me out, but I can go back and look it up.
Yes. I wish I could remember the names of the towns that I drove through, but I've been enjoying the sights so much that I haven't done it. When we talk about experts, Mr. Sinclair mentioned that his expert, Stufen, relied upon demographics now. Keep in mind that here's our theory. Lead economy turned around in 2000. Everybody knows that when the home stakes mine closed in 2000, that was a tremendous blow to the economy, not only of Lead, but of the entire area. However, since that time, lots of things have happened. And in 2002, 2003, it turned around. And that's what our evidence showed. And I'm going to recite that in detail in a moment. I first want to point out, though, that Mr. Stufen, everybody knows that the economy was going bad, you know, from 1990 to 2000 because the Homestakes mine was laying off people. And in 2000, of course, they shut down completely. Everybody knows that. He had statistics showing how dismal things were between 1990 and 2000. He had all kinds of statistics about that. Of course, we can see that. But that's not the issue. The issue isn't how bad was it between 1990 and 2000. The issue was, did it turn around in 2002, as our evidence showed? And it did turn around. But Mr. Stufen didn't do the actual statistics on about 20 exhibits and tables that he had that he would end in 2002. And I asked him, wouldn't you prefer, sir, to have up-to-date statistics all the way through 2005? And he says, well, of course, I wish I had those numbers. I would prefer to have gotten those numbers, but he didn't. Second of all, demographics now, how much does he rely on them? On table 2.1, Mr. Stufen said, although the deposits in Lawrence County had increased over $100 million in the last 5 years, he projected through demographics now that over the next 5 years, it was going to increase only by $4 million. I said to Mr. Stufen, $100 million growth the last 5 years, $4 million in the next 5 years? Does that look right to you? He said, you know, it doesn't look right to me. I called demographics now to find out how they calculated it. They didn't call me back. And so I don't know how they calculated it, but I just put it in my report anyway. Didn't alert the reader of my report that I had concerns about this $4 million number. It didn't seem right to me. That's what's the trouble with someone just coming in and saying, I used this study, when he doesn't know how they calculate what the study was. Also, when we go back to the question of what the test is laid down by this court in American State Bank of Pierre. This court said it's a question, but a way two things. It's an evaluation. Are there any risks that the creditors and depositors are going to be harmed versus the known quality and favorable public policy for a petition? There is evidence in this case that there's no danger to the depositors or creditors. The two banks that are currently in lead are Wells Fargo. And their financial statements are in evidence. They have over billion dollars of equity. And First National. And First National has $75 million in equity. And I asked Steve Black, their president, on cross-examination, Mr. Black, don't you agree with me, sir, that if this branch application is granted by the commission, there's no danger of depositors or creditors of either your bank, First National, or Wells Fargo having any risk of suffering losses? Of course not. There's no risk of that at all. So here we have a need. We have an existing need for an additional bank, as evidenced by the fact that people, folks in the lead zip code, are already coming to our bank in Deadwood out of their way. And we are going to be able to service those customers better and other customers better because competition, people like it, consumers like it, it's the public policy of this state as enunciated by this court that competition in banking is good. The only one thing we got to watch out for, we don't want any banks to fail as a result of any of our policies. But we got to keep in mind that competition is good. Now, let's get into detail about what our evidence was about the turnaround. First of all, we had Mike Percival, a real estate agent in the area. He testified as to what had happened with respect to home sales and lot sales.
Now, were those in lead itself, or how far out into the community did they go?
They very few of them were in lead itself. Lead itself, of course, is 1.99 mile square footage. All but one or two of these subdivisions that Mr. Percival testified about were outside of the lead area. But Mr. Percival said that these subdivisions, the natural place for people to come and shop and come and bank, would be in lead. That's the natural place as you look at the roadways and how people travel. And because of these subdivisions, and the percentages are there, the growth has just been tremendous. And Mr. O'Grady testified that, yeah, the closing of the Homestake Mine had a terribly devastating effect on the lead economy and all of Lawrence County, actually. But there are some good things about it. Back in the days that Homestake's mining was operating and in full force, they owned all the land. They owned the land that the people who worked for them had their houses. And the people, therefore, because they didn't own their own houses, didn't take care of their houses. They'd buy great SUVs, they'd buy great other things, but they wouldn't take care of their houses. Once Homestake pulled out, now they can buy their houses. They can own the land. And Homestake...
I thought they owned their houses, they just didn't own the land it sat on.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And
I know some of my custom friends in Lead, and I wouldn't say they don't take care of their houses. I think maybe that's your... pushing it a little hard there.
Mr. O'Grady was one who said that they didn't take care of them as well then when they didn't own the land underneath them as they do now that they own the land underneath them.
Do you have an explanation for your opponent's comment that from witnesses that Lead has no lumber yard, they have no Walmart, I think it is, he said. So what do you have to say about that?
First of all, I'll repeat the circuit court judge's comments when Mr. Sinclair made that statement. He said, you know, having a Walmart may not be the greatest thing in every community that we've ever known. They don't have a Walmart, but they do have, but there is lots of retail. There's lots of mom and pop stores. There's 28 new businesses have gone in there since the year 2000. And here's the reason why. Deadwood and Lead are sister communities. And Deadwood has gotten the benefits, economic benefits of gambling, and it's had a tremendous effect on land prices in that community. Casinos can afford to pay more for land than a mom-and-pop retail store can. And they've gone in and done
that.
2 minutes. Thank you. And they've gone in and done that. And Deadwood, if you know the history of it, of course, since there has been gambling, all kinds of casinos have gone in, all kinds of money has been used to restore buildings there used by casinos. And that means that, for example, right now, the population of Deadwood is 1,300. 2,000 people work for the casinos. Other people work in all the other things, motels and stuff in Deadwood. They can't live there. Why? Because they can't afford it, because Deadwood is constrained by geography and how many buildable sites that they have. Now that Deadwood has gotten is booming, that has impacted Lead, because Lead has more land available, and areas outside Lead in the service areas has more land available, and that's the reason the economy turned around in Lead, and it's going to continue to grow. And the commissioners made a determination that this competition would be good and that there is a need. If there are no further questions, I would submit my case.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Sinclair, you have 10 minutes, sir.
I have a question before you start on the issue of bias. You're challenging that in your appeal. How much challenge did you do as far as bias to the commission at the time, or before, during, or after the hearing?
What happened is this. Good question. The hearing was originally scheduled for December 16th of 2005. And 2 days before the hearing, it's my style to send out, because as part of my education at the firm, I send out a pre-hearing brief. I send out my exhibits. I always do it for court before a pre-trial, pre-hearing. So I mailed everything out. Once I mailed it out, the other side received it. Immediately, we had to have an emergency hearing, and they immediately asked for a continuance. The reason why is because they weren't prepared. What happened is then we find out we have another hearing on or about January 9th of 2006. We have a pre-trial or a pre-hearing, and we find out that all of a sudden, now they've hired two expert witnesses they didn't have before for the hearing for December 16th. I then all of a sudden said, well, if they're hiring expert witnesses, they didn't have them before, all of a sudden they've got two expert witnesses, I want to hire an expert witness, it's going to take me some time, I would like a continuance, denied. So by the time I found an expert witness, Mr. Stufen, and by the time he agreed, he had 10 days to do his research, 10 days to do his report. So they can chastise him about demographics now, but Mr. Stufen did the best he could in a 10-day period of time. And it's all because I made the mistake of trying to send out a pre-hearing brief and exhibits ahead of time to speed up the process and to let everybody have adequate time ahead of time that here's what the issues are and to frame the issues. I'm penalized for that.
Normally, though, just denying something like that isn't enough to prove bias. Did you challenge bias individually?
What happened is, as to the proceedings, the law provides that as to challenging bias at the proceedings, basically we're contending is that we found out at the time of the hearing is when, or just before the hearing, that Christensen was going to recuse himself. But we didn't know that there wasn't going to be another commissioner appointed, and we didn't know the extent of the commissioner's involvement. And we're simply saying is that the law says that when you examine bias, there has to be a complete appearance of fairness. And the law provides that with bias, that if you have circumstances that may indicate that they're not, that the situation is such, you may not have complete fairness, then in fact that you're supposed to recuse yourself. And the law also provides that as a public official, if it appears that you may be tempted to not carry out your sworn duty, then you're supposed to recuse yourself.
But obviously the commissioners at state did not feel that they were in any danger of that.
They didn't. But the only way that you can analyze a report of Coddington, and the only way you can analyze a report of Stufen, and you examine that Coddington's the county, Stufen is the community, he's the demographics of the banking area, and the only way you can justify the Banking Commission's decision is because of bias, or because of total disregard for the law, or because of the fact that they misapplied the law, or their decision has to be arbitrary, capricious, unreasonable. It's not supported by the evidence.
So what? The whole commission should recuse themselves, and then what do you do?
Well, then what you should do is, I believe that the whole commission should recuse itself, and it should have another commission that is not a regular part of the commission, and that commission can make the decision. I mean, it's almost, and I excuse myself, or pardon me if I'm casting any unfavorable light upon this court, but let's just say one of the members of the court here had a horrific accident. You blew a stop sign. You killed a member of the student body that's here today. And you have a habit and propensity for speeding. So you have a trial on the case. And what happens is that there's maybe a reversible error because they didn't allow the testimony regarding the student text messaging at the time of the accident, comparatory negligence. And what happens is it goes through the court system. All of a sudden it's before this court to make a decision of one of your justices that you spend time with. You see regularly, you serve on the same bench, and you're going to make a decision on his fate of that accident. And you and I know, and it did happen in that Angus Leader case, that every one of you withdrew from making any decisions whether or not that invitation list had to be produced. And I'm saying that the only time that this bias is going to occur and that the only time that they should recuse all themselves is when somebody on the commission, a friend, a compadre, wants to establish a branch bank.
Now, the law provides that if we recuse ourselves, there is a mechanism for replacements. Are there such laws for the Banking Commission to get substitutes?
What happened is there used to be a codified law dealing with conflicts of interest with the Banking Commission, and it's repealed. So them and themselves, I'm not aware of a statutory law. It's basically looking at the Administrative Procedures Act.
So does the rule of necessity apply that they will have to do their best?
Basically. But what happens is that you still have this appearance of impropriety. What I'd like to do is just address some of the issues raised.
I have one question, Mr. Sinclair. Did at any point in the administrative proceeding First National object to the composition of the board?
We did not object to the composition of the board. But we're contending that after reviewed the opinion, there can only be an opinion that there has to be bias based on the decision. What I'd like you to do is compare Coddington's, when you're rendering your decision, compare Coddington's report. He looks on sales and use tax collections for Lawrence County. He looks at new home construction, Lawrence County. He looks at assessed valuation, Lawrence County. Medium household income, Lawrence County. He looks at commercial bank deposits, Lawrence County. They've all increased. He says that's a necessity, that's a need. The problem is that sales and use tax collections, in fact, if you look at what is called the real value, putting in the factor for inflation, they're still decreasing. They're still less than 2,000. They have not increased yet. They haven't turned around.
Let me ask you this on this community and county argument. Isn't the expertise, though, in knowing where a bank should go, how can we substitute our judgment on your community versus county argument? How can we substitute our opinion for what the Banking Commission, who has expertise in that area?
Well, first of all, you have to remember, Stufen defined what is the primary area for the customers and depositors, what's the secondary area. And Mr. Coddington did the same thing. Mr. Coddington, his report never said primary or secondary is the entire county. He says it's the southern county. But his report does nothing but emphasize Lawrence County. He does not look at the demographics or the economics of southern Lawrence County. It is the entire county. And why is that? Because the demographics and economics did not support his contentions. That's why. When we come to your question about the substitution of judgment, the law is clear that it's the Banking Commission's determination of facts you have to give great weight to. But once again, it comes to the issue, if you believe there's an arbitrary, capricious decision, abuse of discretion, or there's a misapplication of the law. And here we're contending that the law provides you look at the community. And their whole decision, if you look at it, is based on the county. The county did this, the county did that, but the testimony is clear. And the facts, by the way, do not lie. The facts are produced by the government. The facts are produced by the county. And it's just the interpretation of them. But all the facts are clear that southern Lawrence County is not flourishing. Northern Lawrence County is. And the bank supports LEED 100%. And the bank supports the community. But the bank is saying that there's a law. And until that law is changed, that law provides, and it still provides, you have to examine, or the Banking Commission has to examine need. And the Banking Commission has to examine support. And until the law is changed, we're asserting that the Banking Commission's decision is arbitrary, capricious, it's not supported, substantially supported by the evidence. And you have to reverse the decision. We can only guess why the Circuit Court rubber-stamped the Banking Commission's decision. But one of the guesses is that the Circuit Court judge did retire. The other thing is at the time of our hearing before the Circuit Court judge, he was busy dealing with litigation over your two referendums that were put on ballot for the public back in June when we tried the issue. So you still have the same standard of review as the district court, and we're still asserting, take a look at the evidence, take a look at the experts' reports.
2 minutes.
Thank you. You've heard some talk about real estate. You've heard, and the evidence is clear, that just because there's sales of real estate in the area, those sales of real estate did not generate a need. It did not generate additional services. First National Bank says that their mortgages hasn't really increased. The loans, by the way, we're doing 2.5 loans a week. That's our loan volume, 2.5 loans a week. Now you expect us to split the pie and split the deposits with another bank, and that's all we're doing, 2.5 loans a week, 2.5 mortgages in one loan. In concluding, look at the evidence, look at the testimony, look at the transcript. We're contending that part of your review is de novo as to the law and that the Banking Commission misapplied the law. We're also contending that under the standard clearly erroneous, that there is not substantial evidence to support the Banking Commission's decision and that their decision should be reversed and the application of First Western Bank to establish a branch office in Lee, South Dakota should be reversed and denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you for allowing me to appear for a lot of
this concludes our term of court, the oral portion of it for this month. And this type of event where it's held on a campus like this versus our ordinary terms, which are held at our courtroom and pier, this type of event doesn't go up by just snapping your fingers. It takes approximately a year and a lot of hard work by a lot of people for this to come to pass, and that's what happened here. We'd like to thank President Schellenkamp of Black Hills State University for her leadership in inviting us, and also the marvelous staff of this institution that have taken care of about everything we thought we needed, and they even thought of a few things that we hadn't. The student monitors and the student body here have been just wonderful. As you're well aware, too, we also have security when we have these events, and we'd like to thank the state troopers, the security from Black Hills State University, and the Spearfish Police Department. We hope that you students and faculty and people from the public have found this interesting. And once again, if you're interested in how these cases are decided, if you haven't picked one up already, the hand booklet has on the back the web page where you can access our decisions, which are posted within 24 hours of when we issue them. So with that, thank you very much, and the court is in recess.